It's a nuisance. There are not people who ought to be there. Our own may not be there. Those three posts also. Mm-hmm. Resentment that there were three posts, big posts resented them.
Did this lead to some friction?
What?
Did it lead to some friction?
No active conflicts. But there was always an undercurrent of resentment. Mm-hmm. If you could in any way hurt the feelings of the state, minister of state, even you did that.
The officer of state?
Yes. Is it? Political fight more than anything else.
Don't you think that Tirrell was rather a bad choice as Chief Secretary?
It's a very difficult character Tirrell was.
Unpredictable?
No, he's not a bad man. He was always willing to work with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Many people regard him as a sort of forceful character. He was not.
Mm-hmm.
He yielded at all points.
But was he rather old-fashioned in his views?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the older periods.
In fact, coming back to the earlier period, just before the Donamo, you get a constitution in which the unofficials were in the majority.
Yes.
And in the finance committee of this council,
yes,
they used to call up various civil servants and criticize them severely.
Yes. Yes.
Was this resented?
By the civil servants? Yes.
Hmm.
I myself was one of the fellows who was criticized very badly by the council, and I resented it very strongly.
On what was this?
About?
On exercise matters?
Yes. Personal matters, somehow or other. They don't seem to be relevant even. They get a dislike to a man,
mm-hmm,
for some reason, then they attack him in council.
And was there a feeling on the part of the civil servants that Fletcher and Elphinston and then later Stanley too didn't protect them sufficiently in council?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you get the impression that Fletcher was trying to curry favour among the politicians?
No. He was trying to fulfill his function of coordinating the activities of these people in a friendly way so as to guide them according to his lights.
Mm-hmm.
There was a...
But wasn't he rather unpopular in the service?
I didn't feel that.
Mm-hmm.
There was always the feeling that the government, mm-hmm, of the time yielded too readily to political pressure, to the not actual financial detriment, at least to the discomfiture of the public servant.
Mm-hmm. What did Fletcher sometimes tend to act above the heads of officials, listen to a complaint from a politician and take action on that complaint without a report?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, I never felt that.
And Stanley, what sort of man was Stanley?
Who?
Stanley. Governor Herbert Stanley.
It had little to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
In what way do you mean?
No, I was wondering whether he was a man of force and whether he was like Fletcher trying to conciliate and...
During all that period,
mm-hmm,
except possibly Stubbs, everybody's policy was conciliation. The spirit had got abroad that you must work with the people.
Mm-hmm.
And the governors, the officers of state, they were all quite loyally stood by that resolution.
Mm-hmm. Why? What did Stubbs do?
Stubbs was a... He didn't put himself out to conciliate people.
Mm-hmm.
Temperamentally, he was a reserved sort of individual who had his views, somewhat arrogant in manner.
Mm-hmm. Cynic? A bit of a cynic?
Yes. Enjoying a little discomfiture of a minister,
mm-hmm,
or a politician, that type of man. Not viciously, but he enjoyed the situation.
Regarding agrarian policy at this time, in fact DSS policy.
Yes.
Did you feel that in the 1930s their targets and their hopes were far too optimistic?
You see, the position of a politician of that kind, who are trying to improve the condition of the people, who are trying to provide for a growing population, is to have unlimited ambition,
mm-hmm.
but to try to effect what is practicable at any particular moment.
Now, for instance, towards the end of the war, when they were having a crash program,
yes.
Of food production,
yes.
their target of newly cleared land was something like, oh, I don't know, 10 acres a day or something like that.
Yes.
But they never reached, and they only got about 25% of the target.
Yes, that was not normal healthy activity. There the threat of starvation
mm-hmm.
somehow produced food, open land. In the open land which should never have been open. They put on to that men who would never be there. Then they tried to work land when there were no people to do it. Because it was necessary to try beating about with your arms because you have to rescue yourself. That is the idea. That was not a regular land policy or agricultural policy.
Mm-hmm.
Agricultural policy was that which determined the activities of Sena in colonizing mill area, in restoring other tanks, and that sort of thing. That was fifth policy.
What do you think of the whole policy of colonization schemes? Economically and in the long run?
It was necessary.
It was?
It was necessary, it was right. Only thing is that it's the quality of the people of the country. When you give anything, you get spoiled. You want more. You want everything free. Now, if you could have opened the colonies and told them, now, here the land. We build a house for you. We have cleared the land for you. Now, you carry on. Then the people were such that they were carried on. It was a very good policy. But the people were had been so accustomed to depend upon other people that the whole idea to get something more from them. The failure of the colonization schemes to go forward much more rapidly was due to the quality of the people than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Another possible criticism, I'm just probing, was that DS, for his programs, he needed a good irrigation department. He needed a good irrigation department.
Yes.
But he seems to have virtually forced some of the more experienced irrigation engineers out of the island. Kennedy and Wilson and a few others.
But Kennedy was a very good man. I think Kennedy liked him.
Yes, but of course he was a bit alcoholic and not easy
yes.
to get on with.
Yes.
But Wilson later and a few others,
yes.
he seems to have virtually forced them out.
Yes, I think Senanga's manner was not good always, I think. It is not a policy against the government service or against Europeans or anything like that, but its manner
mm-hmm.
antagonized these people, especially when they had been used to look down upon the civilized world leader.
Yes.
The situation changed. And that made it intolerable to those things.
Was he prone to want yes men? Did he was he inclined to have yes men as his department of heads, Sennacher?
Yes.
I mean, even later as Prime Minister, I wonder whether he tried to force things down his permanent secretary.
Not anything on which I ought to express opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He shared the quality of the politicians of this country. That is to say, a tendency to be flattered by those people who come down to you and they count out to you and that sort of thing. He was notable that.
Without meaning anything detrimental, I noticed that he had a group of advisors, Asilani.
Yes.
Which is a good thing, I suppose, because he was in touch with the civil servants.
Yes.
And would it be correct to say that in his inner circle at in the 1930s, Oli Gunatilker and C.L. Vikramasinghe were his sort of inner group of advisors?
Yes, they were always in contact with each other.
Uh-huh. And did he have another sort of wider circle of advisors?
No.
Like, I mean, special people who he favoured, like A.G. Ranasinghe, Richard Alibihare, L.J.D.S. Senivaratna?
No.
No, not that he helped them, I mean, he relied on them for advice.
No.
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Srinayaka also had the fault of the politicians of the time, that say, feeling that they knew better than the possible advisors.
Mm-hmm. But of course, his method was to work by conversation. No, he never wrote anything.
What?
He always got others to write for him. He never wrote much. He usually,
no.
I mean, when you conversed with him, it was in conversation rather than through letters.
Yes, yes.
Or minutes or records.
Yes, but he didn't shirk letter writing. I don't know who wrote, maybe his secretary or whatever it is. But he expressed his own views quite freely, right?
Oh, yes. I'm interested in, one aspect I'm interested in is this land development ordinance.
Hmm?
Land development ordinance of
yes.
1935.
Yes.
That's Brain's scheme.
What?
Brain's.
Yes.
Brain scheme.
Yes.
Can you remember they had an ordinance whereby when they gave land, crown grants,
yes.
you could only pass it on to one person.
Yes, yes.
And you couldn't subdivide it
yes.
and things like that.
Yes.
And you couldn't alienate it.
Yes.
Did you have any experience of its working?
Only at the beginning, and before any complication could arise, I had left.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But what did you think of the scheme as a whole?
The chief difficulty is the local social sentiment, habits of family sentiment. You see, the desire that every child should benefit equally from the parents' activity, not from what the parents do, is so strong that this creates integrity. They will try to evade it.
And do you think it has contributed to family disputes in recent years?
What disputes?
Family disputes among the colonies.
I couldn't say that. I'm not familiar with that.
So in that sense, if this creates antagonism among the people,
yes.
then it gets more difficult to work it.
Yes.
Therefore, it might be impracticable.
Mm. Yes. You have to actually practice to see how it works. In some cases it will work, in some cases there will be difficulties, there will be evasion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, we have a law against gifts. Now the Sinhalese people and the Tamils also are so used to giving a dowry to their children
uh-huh.
that it's unworkable. It's like that. Uh-huh.
Someone told me that some of the older GAs, the European GAs, didn't like Brain and his ideas. Therefore, when this was brought into operation, they didn't put their best foot forward.
They didn't?
Put their, try to work it efficiently. I mean, they were not very keen on it.
No.
There's no such thing.
By that time, the government agents, the civil servants, had come to realize that the times had changed, that you must move with the ministers.
In fact, what strikes me about this ordinance was that it needed a lot of staff officers, that is AGS,
yes,
to implement it.
Yes.
Did you feel so?
Yes. But it is...
Oh, well, we could continue, it's all right.
It is not a widespread application of policy.
Uh-huh.
It was only in certain restricted areas at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
Under these tanks and new colonies and that sort of thing, only a very few government agents were involved in it. And I think somehow or other, Senayaka managed to get into these places, the government agents whom he required to let.
I see, yes. Of course, you see, in one of these, the successful working of this ordinance depended on AGS being willing to You say that it was impossible even in your time to be strong.
Yeah, at the time when this law was passed,
yeah,
that's the middle 30s,
yeah,
it was impossible.
Why?
The government servant, mm-hmm, had become to be afraid of the politician.
Mm-hmm.
And the politician was... this is criticizing the politicians generally, but I think it is correct criticism.
Uh-huh.
They were not concerned in what is may be called the general welfare of the community in such matters. Say a man who is dissatisfied, who is very unsatisfactory in his colonization work, is evicted under the laws of man, then immediately there will be a number of politicians who will try to exploit the situation for personal popularity and personal prestige, and they found it impossible to resist it.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think there was a feeling on the part of some AGAs that eviction was too severe a form of punishment.
That's what?
Eviction from the land,
yes,
was too severe a form of punishment for certain small misdemeanors.
Yes, that human nature. All of us feel that, how can we send that man away from it?
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in the agricultural policy when you took over as director, 1936.
Yes.
What were the main lines of policy? What were your main aims?
That was never defined till the... That was never defined till the very... even when I left. And there was... there was no definite policy.
Uh-huh.
There was a general difference between myself, if I may say so,
yeah,
and the administrative machinery, the political machinery.
Uh-huh.
You see, I held the view, and I still hold the view, that this going and trying to induce the people to go if you know Bengals and that sort of thing is not a part of the duties of the Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture, I always felt,
uh-huh,
had to pursue agricultural science, get new principles, new scientific data within their knowledge, and then spread that. They must be farmers prepared to accept that. This idea that you can beat the man into acceptance of these things is something which is foreign to my nature.
Yes, but in effect you are trying to get him to grow more brinjals by using scientific principles.
Yes, that is right.
Mm-hmm.
Really? But really...
Forcing
him to do that, or even trying to teach him generally to grow a brinjal, was not part, in my opinion, of the agriculture.
But then how do you get your ideas across without...
That you have to have the men who will go to these people, may you ought to have demonstrations of that thing, and the people must be interested. Actual grow the potato, the agriculture department trying to teach the people, it's very foolish, because Kandan or some other body is much more capable of growing a good brinjal than the best agriculture instructor in the world. Agriculture is an art, it's not a science. It's an art which you derive by observation, by participation in your parents and your neighbors' work. But that art becomes stationary unless changes are introduced from the scientific point of view. The agriculture department's job, I thought, was only to find that and bring that to the notice of the people. Mm-hmm. But politically, that was not enough.
Mm-hmm.
It was necessary for you to appoint agriculture instructor to go around and tell people, plant some coffee plants here, do this, do that, etc., etc.
But that sort of thing doesn't go down.
Huh?
It doesn't go down.
It will never go down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a useless policy.
Mm-hmm. One of the problems about this agriculture department and the scientific work is that sometimes scientific officers try to force people to adopt scientific techniques,
yes,
when really you must try and also adapt your scientific techniques to the prejudices of the people.
Mm-hmm.
You must adapt your scientific techniques,
yes,
at times to the prejudices of the people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's the prejudice of the people.
I mean to the practices and...
Yes, it goes against the established customs and mm-hmm. traditions. That is true. And that is the whole idea of the agriculture department, ought to be that. Break down prejudice, destroy practices, not violently, but by example, by tuition, by demonstration, and that sort of thing. That ought to be the function of the department.
And hasn't it been the case that sometimes something which has been advocated by the department has been a total failure? Say they say that A is good, but they go and demonstrate it and A proves a failure, and then the whole department is discredited,
yes,
thereafter.
Yes, that happens.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is this, the scientific investigation, whether it is carried out in Barcelona
mm-hmm.
or in America, requires precisely the same amount of application, same amount of effort. Now we have got the means.
Pardon?
We have got the means.
Mm-hmm.
We appoint one chemist or somebody like that, or one plant pathologist. He has to do, his work is not coordinated with anybody else's work and tested. He just carries on. And it is useless work. And the basic inquiry cannot be carried out like that. It requires large areas of scientific application.
Different farms in different regions.
Yeah, that's right. They must be the farmers, they must be scientists, and on a large scale. That sort of thing can be done in rich countries. In this country, you can never appoint more than one botanist. Now, one botanist or geneticist trying to handle all the crops and to produce results within a year or two, absolutely. And so much so that people don't seem to realize here that scientific investigation very often ends in failure. You here, the other man there, try the same thing. You fail, this man fails, that man succeeds. No, he goes near success. What he does is heard of here, and he tries to imitate the next year. That sort of emulation, coordination, activities in different centers are necessary for agricultural science to be effective. We can't afford that. Therefore, all basic investigations ought to be given. Application of any basic fact which is discovered anywhere in the world to our conditions is a very valuable thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, for instance, one of the difficulties was that perhaps the education of the peasant, in the sense that did he have the education to understand that manuals have to be applied in a certain specific way.
Yes.
Did he have the patience and the education to follow these either instructions or even examples?
I don't agree with you that any kind of education is necessary for that sort of thing. Man, now our own people, they have been applying manuals of different kinds
mm-hmm.
for ages. Now when a new thing is introduced, they ought to try it in the ordinary course.
Mm-hmm. No, but some of these new phosphates and things, don't they involve some sort of complicated procedure?
No.
Mm-hmm.
What has to be applied is put into one form, in the form of a mixture, and the application, they are told how to apply. They know. One of the difficulties is farming in this country, agriculture, is still very large subsistence agriculture,
uh-huh.
not commercial agriculture. And in subsistence agriculture, unless you start with family capital or something like that, you can't afford to spend the money that is necessary for buying these things.
Uh-huh.
So that they never get into application. That is one of the principal difficulties in this country. In the absence of farmers, the ordinary subsistence agriculture people are there. Uh-huh. And in very recent years, in the last 40 or 50 years, a certain amount of intensive vegetable cultivation has grown to supply population centers, and that is all.
Uh-huh.
You know, for instance, staple produce, like grain. You haven't yet got a man who starts out to farm 25 acres with the object of selling the paddy. Never
with
had. With the object of selling paddy.
Uh-huh.
You never had, and you never will have in this country.
I was wondering whether the effort and the money put into colonization schemes
yes.
couldn't have been better directed somewhere else, to agricultural light industry or something like that.
No. You see, the position is that you have to find food for these people. Men who are intelligent enough saw, Tenaik was one of those men who saw the difficulties that will arise next year, 10 years hence, 25 years hence, 50 years hence. Now, we never imported rice. We lived somehow on what we could produce, genus crops and yams and little rice grown after the tanks went out of action in these small valleys in the wind zone, which you dam with something and level up with that sort of paddy. This paddy rice import started with a European planter who wanted to feed the estate laborers. And that paddy, they looked around, they found that in Burma, there was the deltaic land, which would produce the rice. It was not producing as much as was necessary, but the demand created the supply. The Indian Tamil went there and bought up the land and cultivated the rice. Well, Tenaik saw all that. Tenaik also saw that that deltaic land also is limited. That the population there is growing as fast as ours. That next year they will send rice with some difficulty, charging us a little more than they did last year. 10 years hence it will be beautiful. You will take my word for it, in 10 years' time you won't get any rice from Burma. And Tenaik saw that. Then what could you do for that? Rice cultivation, under the conditions that are available at that time, was the only remedy. And under the conditions available at that time, this colonization scheme, setting a man down there with his family and say, grow paddy, he has 5 acres of land, would be the course available. I think Tenaik was right.
Isn't rice cultivation rather an uneconomic, unprofitable, shall I say, form of cultivation from the surplus point of view?
Yes. And the fact is, you have to start with the basic fact that the wet tropics or tropics of any kind are unsuitable for the cultivation of tea crops. You plant paddy in the best soil in the tropics, that's Java.
Mm-hmm.
You can get about 30 bushels, 35 bushels per acre at most. You plant the same paddy in a country in which there are 14 hours of mild sunshine a day with not too much rain, and that's what you get 140 bushels, 150 bushels. Economic factor. I remember once my asking Sri Nayaka when he was comparing different countries.
Where do they get 140 bushels?
What?
Are there any countries where they get that many bushels?
Oh yes. In Japan, I think in Formosa, that area,
mm-hmm.
in Italy, in America, all those places, you can get. Yes, I was going to say, once I happened to, when this thing was discussed, I happened to tell Sri Nayaka, now look here, you go to Maharavini, you find a coconut tree, just planted, with about 80 nuts a year. You plant, see, the in Navalapati, you plant the same tree and apply the same manure and all that sort of thing. If you get 20 nuts a year, you are lucky. There must be the limiting factors caused by climate and conditions. And rice cultivation is like that. This idea that you can, on a substantial scale, get 60 bushels of paddy per acre is utter nonsense.
Uh-huh.
And when they pretend that, when they say they are doing it, they are lying.
Uh-huh. Hasn't one of the great difficulties, I mean, in your time and even now,
yes.
one of the great obstacles to government policy has been the lack of adequate statistics on agriculture?
Adequate?
Statistics. On the size of farms, the yields, acreages.
Yes, if there are two sides to consider, that those who determine policy and those who do the actual cultivation. For the matter of people who cultivate, who direct policy, possibly that will be useful.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yes, but for the paddy cultivator here, it's utterly useless.
No, not for him, but for the policy makers,
yes.
it's useful to know the size of the problem
yes.
and the other factors that determine the problem
yes.
before tackling it.
Yes, oh yes, it's very necessary. And then the tendency to deceive themselves is so great here, deceive themselves and deceive others. They still say that they can make Ceylon shell supporting in rice and that sort of thing. That's utterly
nonsense. For instance, don't you think that the means of collecting agricultural statistics, you
yes.
see, the extent of land which is subdivided and which is under tatamaru and
yes.
things like that, the means of collecting that information are not available. The headmen are not good for at this sort of thing.
I don't know whether that is much use to begin with. In second place, it requires actual education on the part of the people who collect the data.
Mm-hmm.
And the survey, land surveys and that sort of thing, and knowledge on the part of the land owner of exactly what he owns,
mm-hmm.
of the boundaries of his land, all that is missing.
They don't have that?
No.
Mm-hmm. Turn to a different aspect. In the earlier years, in the 1910s and 1920s, the British civil servants and the government as a whole were very much against chena cultivation in the dry zone, anywhere.
Yes. That's true.
Pardon?
They thought they destroyed the land.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But don't you think that was wrong?
That was wrong. At that time, you must start with the human. That man must live. And the only way you can live is chena cultivation. You mustn't start with the land. They started with the land. The land must be preserved. The man must take it with exercise. That was definitely wrong.
Don't you think that this illustrates an application of foreign ideas to Ceylon? Because they were thinking of in such a European terms.
Yes.
And to them this was wasteful.
Yes, that's right. Quite right. No. They believe in the economic use of land.
Mm-hmm.
This is uneconomic use.
Yes, but did they go so far as to ban it altogether? They allowed it, didn't they, to some extent?
Yes, you can't see the population die out, so you allow within controlled limits.
But were you even for this control? Were you against this control? was that control taken too far?
Yes, I had no definite ideas at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I would be the government at the time.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you didn't serve in the dry zone except as a,
yes.
as a judge.
Yes.
Now, for instance, did you come into contact with Freeman at all? Pardon?
Yes.
Because he was against this policy.
Yes. He started from the human end, all this. Mm. And he was regarded as a queer sort of individual.
Did the secretariat dislike him?
Because no, they tolerated him. They didn't dislike him.
Mm.
Just as you tolerate any crank.
Mm-hmm. But was he all that crankish in his ideas?
No, he was perfectly honest. As he grew older, his mind began to be weak,
mm-hmm.
like all of us. But apart from that, he was quite cranky.
Who were the people you served with in Ratnapura and Putlam and Batticolo?
Yes.
Who were the other civil servants?
You know, at Batticolo is this Brain,
mm-hmm.
and there was a fellow called Senaviratna.
Mm-hmm.
He died young. At Kernigol, there was Kindersley, and there was Dyson for some time, and Luddington. Mm-hmm. At Ratnapura, there was the government agent Constantine, and after that Alexander,
uh-huh.
and there was FDP's district judge. That's all. That was the time when the civil service was short.
Putlam
worked with the government agent, uh-huh. Agent government agent. I was, he had an old clerk who had been promoted in a sort of, not actually a job into the civil service, but made to do work as an office assistant, and myself as magistrate.
What sort of man was Wade?
Wade? He is a very good man, devoted to his work and no outside general interest, like these people who want to play games and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
He has his hobby in bird watching,
yes.
and devoted to his work.
Luddington?
He was a very intelligent man.
He was a maths man, wasn't he?
Yes, he was a very intelligent man.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because he afterwards, I think he left the civil service and became a planter, didn't he?
No.
Oh.
He married a woman who I say was a planter.
Oh, I see.
I don't know what he did after that.
I was wondering whether he was rather an orthodox type, Luddington.
He never functioned as government agent or anything like that. He was office assistant. And after that, I think he was in the land settlement department or something like that. I forget what.
Uh-huh. Well, what were your impressions of the land settlement department? Do you think that they were working in a liberal manner or too strict?
It depended very largely, I think, upon the individual.
Uh-huh.
The whether you declare this land private land or crown land depended very largely on the not only on the evidence but on your outlook on that evidence, on the way that you look at it. Therefore it is personal. The object of government, as I understood, was merely to define the status of the land, whether that belonged to the people or had to be preserved as crown land.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that they wanted to take it as crown land in order to do the European plant is utter nonsense.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. They want to make the best use of the land. It may be that at any particular time the European plant is the best use. It may, at another time it may be allocation to peasants. Whatever it is, they want to make the best use of the land. That was the idea. Mm-hmm. Because with this heavy land ownership of this belongs to my family, that area is mine, when that is challenged, when the government declares this is not your land, they gain a lot of resentment. And when you are hurt, you try to attribute motives to the other fellow.
Uh-huh. what did you think of the headman system as a whole?
With the population like ours who had to be treated paternally,
mm-hmm.
a system of local men like that, other than doing police work, but actually communication was necessary. And I think at that time, those people who were appointed headmen were very good for that purpose. And during recent floods, I began to regret the change. Now, I was rescued from that place in a pada boat, in a improvised boat, by the old headman. The Grama Sevaka, we didn't hear of. No one heard of till the floods were over. And he came to ask the people what damage he was suffering. But when it was necessary to go around in some sort of improvised boat and see how do people are, the old headman who was...
The old headman?
Old headman who lost his job. He was the man at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He took food from his own house to the various people who couldn't cook. For that sort of social work, that headman system was very good. And that sort of social work was what was required at that time. Two things. So far as the people was concerned, that social work. So far as the government was concerned, some contact with the people. And
a personal factor.
Huh?
A personal factor.
Yes, yes. And that headman proved a very good thing. Because these things can't last forever.
What about all these accusations of bribery and corruption and cliques?
It's very difficult to say anything because in our country, the charge is brought very easily.
Brought?
Charge is brought very easily.
Mm-hmm.
They say, job advertised. You and I apply. You get the job. My tendency is to say that you bribed that man, or that man appointed you because he happened to know your father's cousin or something like that. That it is a sort of natural relation, selection, which may be erroneous, but still that it is honorable, you don't grant.
In fact, the British used this argument as an argument against the employment of Ceylonese in administrative posts. They said that, say, Silva was a civil servant, they said that Silva couldn't be made a GA because whatever he said or did, the people would distrust.
That's true to a certain extent.
But then, in that case, we'd never get self-government.
In that case?
We'd never get self-government.
Yes. We agree that our government is not too good, but we won't self-government because we want our government good or bad. If you wait till the ideal conditions are reached where foreign race goes and administers justice in a place where they have no interest, if you wait for that, you'll never get self-government.
But you felt it, that didn't you, that they didn't want Ceylonese as GAs and AGAs in the early years?
There was no time really, because the first, apart from these men, what is called the local division that came recently, Arunachalam got into this, Paul Pierce got into this, then I got into this.
But then Paul Pierce was never made an AGA?
No, that's right. And Arunachalam was never made an AGA. Those were the only two that were appointed to this. And hardly a European who was not appointed. It is true, it is. There was a sort of racial bias.
There was a distrust of the discretion of the Ceylonese.
Yes, it is. They were not convinced of the Ceylonese man's ability or even his honesty.
Mm-hmm. Did you come across any arrogance on the part of European civil servants or particularly of planters?
There was arrogance always. The planters, very great deal.
Officials?
Officials, they had to recognize their duty.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore their arrogance, if at all, was modified.
Mm-hmm.
But they were extremely reserved. Their social circle was their own. And quite natural.
But did you feel that this aloofness or this separation was bad because they were not in touch with the educated opinion, educated Ceylonese opinion?
Yes, it was unfortunate. Uh-huh. It didn't produce the best possible results.
There were many of them, many officials, patronizing, rather too patronizing in there.
Yes.
On the other hand, looking at it the other way, because they were foreign race and because they were patronizing, etc., did you feel that some of the Ceylonese politicians had a rather, what I say, a pronounced inferiority complex?
Oh yes, there's no question about it. Uh-huh. Even with reference to the Ceylonese civil servants, the politicians have an inferiority complex.
Yes,
they're much more than the racial. They're the racial, the actual recognition of racial superiority of the white man was there.
Uh-huh.
In all the world over, where the white man went.